Save big money when you shop at Menards. Transform your home in one weekend with exterior wood stain and sealer from Dutch Boy. It provides one coat protection on decks, fences, siding, and outdoor furniture. It repels rain after just 4 hours of application. That means quicker results, saving you both time and money. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Stop by your local Menards today.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio, here in hour number two. I am your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Connect with us online, that's right, at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Well, the college football conversation continues week two, and right now we are going to do a crossover. We're going to head out to the SEC, and we're ready for a big matchup, the Georgia Bulldogs. How about this? They are on the road in Notre Dame, at Notre Dame, I should say, for a 6:30 kickoff on Saturday. The Bulldogs, as a recap, they took care of business last weekend against Appalachian State, 31-10, and they're going to be looking to keep things rolling. We are so excited to have with us tonight, and that, of course, is Jason Butt. He is a Georgia beat writer with the Macon Telegraph and has just released his second book. It is titled The Georgia Bulldogs, Fans Bucket List. He has teamed up with our good friends from Triumph Books, and welcome back to the show. Jason, it's been way too long. It's been like at least a year.
Yeah, it sure has. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure as always.
Well, we want to welcome you to the show. So talk to us before we dive into the book. What have the Bulldogs, what have they shown you so far in 2017?
Well, now first week opener against Appalachian State, really thought the defense did an outstanding job containing the run. That's something that they've really wanted to continue to improve going into Kirby Smart's second season. That's going to be a focal point against Notre Dame. So that's an area with a eight-man defensive line rotation. I think that's something that's going to continue to be a strength as this season goes on. And quite frankly, when you look at the offensive side of the ball, yeah, they got the running backs, Nick Chubb, Sony Michel. Those guys were able to get some things going. But you look at the situation right now at quarterback. Jake Addison goes down in the third drive of that Appalachian State game. It's Jake Fromm's turn for the foreseeable future. And the young kid from Warner Robins, Georgia, he sure did look impressive early on against Appalachian State, 143 yards and a touchdown. And most of that was in the first half. They got conservative when they got out to the 21-0 lead. So it's one thing to do that against Appalachian State. It's another to go into a hostile environment like Notre Dame and to continue it. So I think there will be a lot of eyes wondering how the young Jake Fromm handles that stage that he's about to set foot on.
Week two college football conversation continues with Jason Butt after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. We have had a lot of college football talk, and right now we are in the SEC Conference visiting with Jason Butt, the Georgia beat writer for the Macon Telegraph. So as we dissect the Bulldogs and break it down, what are you witnessing in terms of how much has the offense improved? Because last year, the Bulldogs, they were 87th nationally in total offense.
Yeah, it was not a good deal for them last year. That offensive line endured a lot of ups and downs, a lot of downs, I should say, in the first 8 weeks of the year. When you have a guy like Nick Chubb, who before the knee injury as a sophomore, he was averaging, somewhere in between 7 and 8 yards a carry for his career, and then he comes out last year, only can manage 5 yards. Yeah, he wasn't 100%, but a lot of it had to do with the fact that offensive line couldn't get a push, couldn't get things going. They're hoping that that's improved. It looked to be improved, albeit against a smaller defensive line in Appalachian State. They really got to get better interior play. They had a guy, Solomon Kinley. He was a redshirt freshman. He was slated to start but couldn't due to an ankle injury. They're looking for him to get his first career start against Notre Dame. So that's a big area that they hope they see improvement, because if they're able to get that push and they're able to run the ball, that's going to open up so many things for this offense. That's really where it all lies. I mean, you got two of the best running backs in the country. you've got a stable of receivers. That you got a real good core, maybe not a number one go-to guy, but you got a pretty solid core of receivers who can move the chains. Javon Wims, I think, is going to emerge as one of the SEC's better, maybe top 10, top 15 receivers this season. And so they have guys at the skill position spots that can make plays. It really just falls on that offensive line when they go against better competition. They've got to get the job done. They've got to get movement, and they've got to spring those running backs.
What do you think the strength is of the Bulldogs?
It's definitely that defensive front seven.
Okay.
I mean, they got everybody back. And Roquan Smith, he's an excellent leader. He's a guy who can run sideline to sideline, probably as good as anybody in the country. I think that that the front seven alone is going to keep them in games no matter what this season. And you look at the schedule, Notre Dame's going to be one of the tougher teams they play this year. I expect them to be improved and have a winning record, go to a bowl, but this was a 4-8 team last year, and they lost to a lot of teams that, you know, Notre Dame's not historically, typically going to lose to. So, I mean, Georgia, when you look at the teams and everything, you look at the defense and how it stacks up to the offense, you would almost think that Georgia would have an advantage there. And I think that in most games, Georgia's front seven will have an advantage in that department.
How would you compare them defensively against some of the best teams and units in the country, not just in the SEC?
Sure. Well, yeah, the best defense, I'd say, once again, is Alabama.
Right.
But I think Georgia's probably has the second best defense in the SEC. That's my opinion. And then you kind of look around the country. I was really impressed with what Michigan did against Florida and Dallas in that opener.
Yeah.
And Michigan's a fairly young defense, too. So, you know, what they were able to do, and they have one of the better defensive coordinators in Don Brown. So that's an impressive job he's been able to do there since taking that job. And I really do think when it's all said and done, Georgia statistically will probably finish in the top 15. I know that they probably gave up too many rushing yards against Appalachian State, about 136. A lot of those did come late, and a couple of them, they did give up a couple of big runs, a 32-yarder, which was actually then negated by a 22-yard loss, and then a late 22-yard draw at the end of the first half that kind of surprised them. So that line's a little deceiving.
Hey, college football, it is back. That's right, week two, and we are excited for another thrilling weekend. We're talking right now about the Georgia Bulldogs. As a recap, of course, last year they were 8-5 in the SEC, 4-4, second in the East. And you have just highlighted, talking about this matchup tomorrow against Notre Dame, it is a massive test. How do you think that the Bulldogs are going to respond to this challenge?
Well, they've sure been talking about it among themselves. You know, it's kind of
There's a little smack talk going on.
yeah. You know, Dominic Sanders, and the thing is, Georgia's senior safety, he's not really a talkative kind of guy. I mean, he really is all about business. He really is kind of a lead by example. He's become more vocal the older he's gotten. But for him to come out and repeatedly say they just want to punish them from the start, and he doesn't care about Notre Dame's history. You know, he alluded to the fact that he understands they're underdogs in this game, and that was kind of eye opening. It's clear that these guys that they want this game, that they did. While they may not admit it, they understand the significance of what Notre Dame is historically in this sport, and I'm sure they want to get on that stage and respond accordingly on NBC, on Notre Dame's television network, and as Dominic Sanders said, punish them from the start. Now, will they be able to do that? You know, that still remains to be seen. You look at Notre Dame's massive offensive line, and then those two guys on the left side, McGlinchey and Nelson, those guys are potential first-round NFL picks. And so I think what was really getting penetration, getting pressure, and forcing Brandon Wimbush into some early mistakes, that's going to be key for this Georgia defense.
Well, Georgia wants to get off to a fast start, but let's look at it from Notre Dame's perspective, because they look at this as a very special opportunity. Brian Kelly, of course, Notre Dame, they haven't hosted an SEC team at home since 2005. So, an opportunity for them to test themselves at home and against such a tremendous and a quality opponent in the Bulldogs.
Right, and then you look back at that national championship game after the 2012 regular season, and which actually it could have been Georgia. They had that classic with Alabama in the SEC championship. That winner went to play Notre Dame, and And Alabama just did whatever they wanted to against them. So this is kind of a this is a time for Notre Dame to, you know, in a regular season, a top 25 matchup. This is a chance to get a statement win to say that, you know, that Notre Dame is still relevant. That Notre Dame is still a program that teams have to fear. I think, outside of that season in which that was one of the few years where you saw Notre Dame just not have the kind of schedule it normally has, you know, that year they just got so many unimpressive wins and were able to get to the national championship. Obviously, that hasn't been the case since. And, playing a team like Georgia, number 15 in the country, second week of the year, I think that's a good chance for the Fighting Irish to kind of make a statement to say that there's still a team to be reckoned with.
It is going to be an exciting matchup. We are visiting with Jason Butt, the Georgia Bulldogs beat writer, the Macon Telegraph. Reach out to our audience. How can they connect with you, Jason?
They can follow me on Twitter at Jason H. Butt. You can also follow our Facebook page, the Bulldogs Beat, at facebook.com/BulldogsBeat. That's all the Georgia stories that we write there at the Macon Telegraph. We post all that stuff there.
And, of course, we extended this invitation because Jason has just released, as he's teamed up with our good friends from Triumph Books, his second book, and it is titled The Georgia Bulldogs Fans Bucket List. So what can all Bulldog fans, what can they look forward to when they open it up?
It's a little bit of everything, you know, that you can relive a lot of the history that Georgia has had. I mean, it's a very, very historical program all the way from, you know, going back to when Wally Butts, a head coach at Georgia, when he was, doing his thing, and the 1942 national championship, all the way through Vince Dooley, Mark Richt, Kirby Smart, Jim Donnan wrote the foreword. He has a great, and one of the reasons I wanted Jim Donnan to help out and write this foreword is because there's so much more to the University of Georgia than its football program, and so much more to Athens than just it's, you know, the UGA athletics program. And Jim Donnan's an interesting example of that because, you know, he was there for 5 years, and, you know, it didn't really work out for him. And you know, he got fired. But instead of pursuing coaching, you know, he had a couple of offers. He could have gone to Kentucky or Indiana and kept coaching. But he loved Athens so much that he decided to retire and stay in Athens. And he's since been kind of a lifelong Georgia fan, and he's been, you know, well accepted by the fan base. And so the book really kind of delves into more about why Athens is a special place, more so than football. You know, there's so much to do. It all ties into football, of course, but just the surrounding community atmosphere of the college town that the University of Georgia is in, it kind of makes that city a special environment for those who live there and for those who love the university.
It is a fun read. Of course, Georgia has 5 national championships, 120 years of tradition. It is all packed inside this fun read of the Georgia Bulldog fans bucket list. And that is Jason Butt that has been with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Thank you so much, Jason. Enjoy the game this weekend, okay? Be safe.
All right. Sounds good. Take care, and thanks for having me on.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. The next generation of sports radio, SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue with week 2, our college football coverage. Right now we're headed to the Big Ten Conference. That's right, the Ohio State Buckeyes. And I am so excited for one of the big games on Saturday because the Buckeyes, they will host my Oklahoma Sooners, and what a game it will be. Revenge will certainly be on the mind for OU. It's time to open up our guest line and welcome back to our show. He is a New York Times bestselling author and just re-released his book that he teamed up with Urban Meyer. It is titled Urban Meyer, Above the Line, Lessons in Leadership and Life from a Championship Program. Good evening, Wayne Coffey.
Good evening, Alyssa. Good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you back on the program. And let's talk about the Buckeyes, because how closely are you following them this season and their pursuit of a national championship?
Well, I think they're looking pretty strong, though we'd have to say that if Coach Meyer knew that you were an Oklahoma Sooners fan, he might terminate this interview right now.
Oh.
So, but we'll cut you some slack on that, and in spite of your rooting interest. And no, but I know that Urban's very optimistic about this season. He likes his team. He likes the character of the team, and he's, as we write about in the book Above the Line. I mean, he's very passionate about leadership, about motivating people and bringing out their best, and certainly with his track record going all the way back to Bowling Green, where his head coaching journey started, he's got a pretty strong track record at doing exactly that, getting the best out of his people.
You know, it's been about a year ago that you were on the show when the book was released, and of course it has had tremendous success, as you're talking about. It became a New York Times bestseller, and then, of course, Wayne Coffey with us at SB Nation Radio. I do want to talk some more. Let's give a preview for all the listeners tuning in tonight. We mentioned Oklahoma, the big matchup as they head to Ohio State. Revenge, it certainly is on their mind because the Buckeyes, they took care of business in Norman last year, 45-24. And I know Oklahoma's going to have a very long memory. How do you see this particular matchup? How do you see it playing out?
Well, you know, it's hard without getting into the real X's and O's, Alyssa. I really think that, you know, the one thing I can tell you about Urban and his approach with Ohio State is that he will know that Sooner and Sooner Nation will be very much revenge-minded, and there'll be, you know, many reminders to the Oklahoma players about what went down last year. And I think, you know, one of the things that Urban does as a leader and as a coach is to really, it's almost a cliche, but really he just kind of loads everything into this day. He wakes up in the morning, and this is a guy, and I've really never met anyone quite like him in over 30 years as a journalist, but he wakes up in the morning and his feet hit the floor and the guy's thinking, how can I be better today? How can I be better today as a coach, as a husband, as a father than I was yesterday? And he, this is how he, the message that he conveys to his players too, you know, inertia, stagnation is the enemy. It's the mortal enemy, really almost more than Oklahoma or Michigan or whoever the opponent might be. The enemy is staying in the same place, and the goal's always to get better, to be, as he would say, above the line.
Yes, we are visiting with Wayne Coffey, who teamed up with Urban Meyer, of course, the new book that is being re-released, Above the Line, Remarkable Lessons in Leadership and Team Building from One of the Greatest College Footballs of Our Time. That's what Wayne is talking about. So talking about getting better, improvement, what can Ohio State do this week against the Sooners to improve? Because, Wayne, they really did show some vulnerability last week against Indiana. I mean, they allowed 437 yards of offense.
Yes, they did, and I mean that's some pretty big time vulnerability, and you can know that has been dissected to a very large degree this week in Columbus. And I think, I mean, clearly they need to tighten up defensively. There's no doubt about that. But you know, even going back to their last championship season 2 years ago, Alyssa, there were some real bumps early in the season. There was a bad loss. There were some very shaky victories where it could have gone either way. They squeaked by Penn State in overtime. It was to the point that in late September, people in Columbus were writing them off, like, this season's going nowhere. And, you know, all I would say is that this is not a man or a program to ever underestimate. You know, in a lot of ways, Alyssa, they're very different from Alabama, which is just, you know, it's almost, that team is so loaded that it's almost as if they could just report right to the NFL and compete. And, and Ohio State, certainly, I mean, not to equate them with the Sisters of the Poor by any means, but there's kind of almost an underdog mentality they have. I mean, I think that they think that they, you know, they just are always striving to get better. And I think, again, that is where his Urban's focus is. He has one of his interesting sayings that he harps on all the time is an equation. You can almost write it like a mathematical equation, and that is E plus R equals O. And that is almost the mantra of the whole Ohio State football program. And what that basically means, the E is the event that is going on in your life, and this goes way beyond football. It could be a family illness. It could be a demotion or a promotion at work. It could be a traffic jam. It could be anything at all, or a bad loss on a Saturday night. So we don't really have control over the E's in our life. But what we do have control over totally is the R, which is how we respond to that E. And it's that R that will determine the O, or the outcome. And this is where his focus is so singularly every day of his life, and every day of this week as he's preparing for this Oklahoma game, it's on the R. So last week, Ohio State had an E that he didn't like, I'm sure. All those yards they let up on defense against Indiana. So now, what is their response to that? And that response and its effectiveness will be what, in large measure, determines the outcome.
You know, and I think back to a year ago against Clemson, where they were completely shut out in the college football playoff, and that certainly didn't sit well. You have to wonder, you know, just how they respond to adversity. And also, you know, when we talk about Urban Meyer, he's so impressive as a coach because he decisively executes in such stressful situations. Somehow, some way, he's going to try to find a way to get things done.
No, he does. And he, you know, in some ways, I mean, it sounds almost odd to say that he likes stress. I'm not sure he likes stress any more than the rest of us, but I think he embraces it, and he's not afraid of it. And in a lot of ways, I think, you know, he's almost energized by it. He's energized by challenges. So, yeah, I mean, what happened against Clemson was almost unimaginable and a humiliation, you know, in front of the whole college football world. But again, I can tell you that he's as good as anyone I've ever seen at, you know, at dealing with it, not wallowing and just saying, okay, you know, we just got our butts kicked, and where are we going from here? What kind of character are we going to show? What is our R going to be in the face of this hideous E? And really, that's what has carried him through at every stop of this legendary career he's had.
Only have time for one more question with Wayne Coffey. He is the New York Times best-selling author, teamed up with the terrific coach in Urban Meyer, and released this book. Of course, it's being re-released in paperback. It is titled Above the Line, Lessons in Leadership and Life from a Championship Program. And there is so many fascinating chapters in this particular book. I especially enjoyed the one on creating a culture. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think creating a culture we could talk about this for hours, Liz,
right.
And I know we don't have that, but it's really the culture of any business, of any team, is really going to define who that is. So is there, to him, the things you want to get rid of, and maybe that's the best way to go at it. I mean, what you want to get rid of in the culture in your organization is what he calls BCD behavior. BCD stands for blame, complain, defend. So if someone gets toasted for a touchdown on Saturday night, I guarantee Urban Meyer's not going to want to hear this guy say, hey, you know, the other defensive back, the safety was supposed to be there, or I was
right.
Where, you know, he doesn't, I tell you, if the guy tries to blame it on someone else, it will not be pretty. And he doesn't want to hear about complaints. He doesn't want to hear any excuses. He doesn't want you to defend, well, you know, I was sick this week, or I missed practice, or I've got family issues. He calls for complete, total accountability at all times. And it starts with himself. And, you know, the one thing I will say is, you know, for as prominent and as successful and wealthy as this man is, I mean, he is as good at being fiercely honest with himself as anyone I've ever encountered. I mean, if they lose tomorrow night, he'll be in front of the cameras in a notebook saying, you know what, I got big time out coached tonight. We got outplayed. That is on me. That's no one else's excuse. And that is the culture, that full accountability that he tries to instill in his program.
And you capture that in the book. New York Times bestselling author Wayne Coffey, been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. Go ahead and get a copy of the new book that's been re-released, Above the Line, Lessons in Leadership and Life from a Championship Program. Simply the best. Wayne, thank you so much for joining us tonight at SB Nation Radio.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Enjoy the game. Much more coming your way. Hour number two
okay.
at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You stay close.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with our next segment, of course, we love to connect with you. So join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports. You can always email the show at info@eradiosports.com. And Podcast Arena, your source for all of our amazing shows here at our network, the next generation of sports radio, SB Nation, podcastarena.com. Well, we are so excited that you're along for the ride over these 2 hours and delighted to have back with us, that is former PGA Tour player and author Larry Miller. Good evening, Larry. Nice to have you back with us inside the ropes where you are my caddy each and every week. Hello, my friend.
Hello. Good evening. Great to be with you again and your listening audience. Thank you.
Well, it's always wonderful to have you on the program, and great news to report. You know, the recovery efforts, they are clearly underway. And it's been, you know, of course, such a difficult time for so many family and friends down here in Houston. But we've got to recognize, how about the LPGA stepping up and the lovely Stacey Lewis with her win at Cambia Portland Classic, and donates her entire earnings, over $200,000, in relief efforts here for her hometown area. And it was just another tremendous story with her charitable win.
Well, it doesn't surprise me at all. Stacey, I know Stacey. And,
do you? Okay.
Been around her a few times, and she's a very, very caring, thoughtful person. And so I think, you know, it's just not unexpected at all, and just a wonderful gesture on her part. And I know that she has heartfelt compassion for all the people that are in trouble there, and so it's wonderful for her to step up like that.
Well, Stacey and her husband, they actually live at the Golf Club of Houston. I did not know that. And, of course, that golf course was impacted severely by just the Hurricane Harvey. That course got hit really hard, and I guess she's from the Woodlands area. So it's tremendous because, you know, there's been so much attention, and we so appreciate all that J.J. Watt has done, but it's really cool to see LPGA star like Stacey to, you know, really contributing and helping out so many.
Yep, and hopefully that will, you know, set the tone, and many others will start doing. I'm sure they are, and probably some do it anonymously even. And but I'm sure that's going to, you know, the help is going to come pouring in from all over, and a lot of players are going to join in. So great for Stacey to take the lead there, and especially when she's in an area herself, you know, where they are impacted. And that makes it even more special to be so caring for others while you're at the same time going through bad stuff, too.
Absolutely. Larry Miller back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are inside the ropes, and we've got a lot of ground, a lot of things that we want to cover. I'm not sure. I know you and Carol are up in, or Connie are up in Colorado right now enjoying some cooler temperatures. Not sure if you had a chance to watch the long drive competition. Have you had a chance to watch a little bit of that? That is fascinating to watch. It's not the most fundamental golf, but it is exciting.
Yeah. I've seen some of it, you know, and it's almost like a sideshow, you know, in a circus.
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
You know, where it's not, like you say, it's not traditional golf. I mean, you know, some of these guys probably couldn't break 90 or 100. Although some of them are pretty good, you've got guys, they look like wrestlers, they look like, you know, look like weightlifters, and
yeah.
come out there and, you know, wind up and hit as hard as they can hit it. And it is like a sideshow, but it's very interesting because I think from the standpoint of how the equipment has really evolved the distance in golf, where that National Long Drive contest used to be where 360, 370 was really, you know, long, and everybody's eyes got wide when they saw that. And now, you know, now it's 460 yards and 400, you know, it's just, and I think that's a product of the equipment, really. And of course, these guys, you know, they have to hit it in that fairway. They have to hit it straight as well as 400 and something yards. And they might hit one out of five in the fairway. But when they hit it, boy, you know, and you don't see any little guys doing this. I mean, these are all monsters, you know.
Yeah.
They wind up, and they hit it. When they catch it in the sweet spot with these new drivers and these shafts and the golf balls, it You know, you wonder where the limits are. You know, where is it going to stop? Is it going to be 500-600 yards down the line? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
How do they do it? I mean, what's the number one rule if you want to, you know, bomb it? You really want to nut your drive. You're talking about hitting it in that sweet spot.
Well, there's two things. It's speed of the club at impact with the ball and how solidly the ball is hit on the club face. So these guys, as I said, they're so big and so strong, and they have a golf swing that they can create lag, which that's how you get club head speed, is you create lag in your swing, and then you hold, you know, you create an angle at the top of your swing between your left arm and the club shaft of at least 90 degrees, and you hold that on the way down, and you release it into the ball. Well, the more angle you can get and the longer you can hold it and then release it and then hit it solid, well, that's how you get it. That's how far the, you know, that's how you get those tremendous distances. But to get that speed, to get that much speed, to hit the ball that far over 400 yards, you know, you're not going to see any little people doing it. I don't care how flexible you are. You better have some muscle behind you to do that.
Well, I have to admit, and you know this well, being the mother of two junior golfers, you know, I really hesitated even turning on the Golf Channel and watching the competition, but they wanted to watch it so desperately, but because it is not the most fundamentally sound. I mean, these guys, I mean, they're on a clock. They only have so much time to hit, what, four shots?
Yeah. It's just entertainment, you know, and it's fun to watch, and, you know, because it's our sport. And it's almost like a, I don't want to say a freak show, you know, but to us mere mortals, you know, who can't hit it 400 yards or even 300, you know, it's like weird. And so it's kind of fun to watch it. And it's a special thing. But no, it's, you know, and listen, a lot of big money has become, you know, involved in this thing.
Yeah.
And so these guys, some of these guys start training, you know, years before to get as strong as they can get and be able to get a swing where they can create all that lag. So it's become a big deal, you know, a big moneymaker. But it's fun to watch.
You know, it's crazy watching these guys, as you have talked about. They're hitting it over 400 yards in competition and just this incredible swing speeds. But you had even talked about back in the day, you know, the guys were hitting it 360. How about the women? The women are hitting it that far. And I thought that was just, I mean, that was incredible to watch.
Yeah. Well, it's training, you know, all this weight training they're doing and flexibility training. But I'll tell you, though, it's the equipment more than anything else. It's the equipment factor. I mean, you see, you know, you can go to any driving range in America and you can see people. They might be anywhere from 10 to 20 handicappers, but they can bomb it out there because the ball goes so far and the clubs are so they're so forgiving, number one, and the mass that these shafts they have in the clubs, the flex point is just optimum, and the club heads are lighter but yet strong with titanium, and you know all these combinations. That's the biggest reason that the ball is going so far. The ball and the drivers themselves.
What do you think about that Epic driver and that jailbreak technology? Are you a big believer in that? What say you? Would you use that? Would you recommend that for a junior golfer?
You know what? The better player you are, the better that club is for you. It's a club that, you know, the jailbreak technology has two titanium bars behind the club face.
Right.
And they run vertically, you know, on either side of the sweet spot. And if you hit that driver in between those bars in the sweet spot, it really goes. But if you miss it just the slightest bit, it doesn't go well at all. I'm not a big fan of it for the average player. But for the better player who hits it on the sweet spot more consistently, it's really good. It goes really, really long. But, you know, I don't play it myself. I'm just not a huge fan of it in particular. But, you know, that's not to say that it's not a good driver for someone who hits it pure every time, you know. So, and not, the other thing is, too, club head speed. The more club head speed you have, then the better, you know, the more help you're going to get from that driver. So it's not for a person with 85-mile-an-hour club head speed. You're not going to get any help with that. But if you have 95 to 100, 105, you're going to get a lot of help with it. So that's the way to look at it.
Larry Miller is a life member of the PGA and former PGA Tour player. He's the author of four books on golf and performance. His latest release this past spring in 2017, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental and What He Never Told the World. Since we're talking about the long drive contest, what are some slight changes that you could recommend even to our listeners to hit the ball farther without compromising your setup? Because we were talking about, I mean, I was apprehensive to even let, you know, my sons watch this because I don't want them, you know, messing with their routine, their setup, and their pace and their timing.
Well, I would recommend the two best ways that I've found to increase your club head speed is to swing a weighted club. Get yourself one of those weighted drivers and swing that thing 50 times a day. And I guarantee you in a few weeks you're going to be hitting it 10 yards longer.
Really?
Because here's the deal. When you swing a golf club, you're using a very specific set of muscles. And if you swing a weighted club, it's the same thing as weightlifting for golf because you are taking a heavier weight and you're working and touching every one of those specific muscles you use when you swing. So it makes perfect sense that swinging a weighted club is going to increase the strength in your golfing muscles, those specific ones that you use. And so that's Gary Player told me that in 1976. I asked him what the best exercise for golf was, and he said swinging a weighted club. And so that's the best way to do it. It'll increase the those muscles that you use, and you'll hit it longer. But you have to do it. You have to do it every day. You know, you have to do it without fail. You have to do it 50, 60 times a day, every single day. In just a few weeks, you'll see a marked difference in your distance.
So what should your swing thoughts be as you are doing that? What should you be thinking
balance.
About, Larry?
Balance.
Okay.
You want to increase your speed while keeping perfect balance because without balance, you can't get power. Any sport, I don't care what sport it is, if you're falling off balance, you can't deliver a powerful blow or swing or strike. And so can't compromise your balance. You don't want to swing so hard that you lose balance, but yet if you get stronger and stronger while keeping your balance, then you're going to really get maximum distance.
Talk to me about tempo, because that's a key component. We were talking about the long drive contest. I certainly have never seen tempo like those guys. I mean, because they're on the clock, of course, and they're trying to hit it quick and get so many shots in a certain amount of time. But just the importance of tempo.
The tempo is the same thing. Okay, when we talk about tempo in golf, we talk about gradual acceleration. So when you start your swing, you know, and you don't hit the ball with your backswing, okay? So the purpose of the backswing is just to set the club into a good position from which you can accelerate it into the ball. But the acceleration has to be gradual. You can't do it all at once. You can't get to the top and then jump at it and force it and try to swing hard and throw the club at the ball. You want to take a nice leisurely backswing, set the club in great position, and then just fire it gradually and accelerate it, and it should reach a crescendo, if you will, or a top-end speed right at or just after impact. So the key to tempo is gradual acceleration, not sudden acceleration. And if you watch Hideki Matsuyama, a great example of that. Got just a gorgeous, to me, a golf swing where he, you know, takes it back leisurely, sets it, almost stops, and then just gradually explodes into the ball. So that's the thought, is to just think gradual acceleration while keeping your balance.
PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
We are so glad you're with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. As usual, our special guest, Larry Miller, as we are Inside the Ropes. Let's talk about the book that was released this past spring. This is your fourth book. It is titled Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. And you were providing some technical advice, talking about the importance of balance and tempo. What are some of the practical tips and drills that will help improve your tee to green game?
Well, a great balance drill is to, you know, swing with your feet together, of course. Because if you don't keep your balance doing that, you're going to teeter over, you know, one side or the other and fall over. So it's a great drill for balance is to swing, take practice swings with your feet together or maybe an inch apart or something, and keep doing that. And that forces you to keep your balance. And then when you take your normal stance, it's a lot easier to stay on the insides. You know, great balance in golf, basically, Hogan once said that the golf is played from the insides of the feet. So, you know, you set up, and of course, both your legs are angled in almost like a tripod, a triangle. And then as you swing back, you swing from the inside of the left foot to the inside of the right foot.
Mm-hmm.
And then back on the downswing, back from the inside of the right to the inside of the left. So it's played really on the insides of the feet. And that way you keep your center of gravity in one place. That's a tremendous drill. Another really good drill is to swing the club to the top and stop. Completely stop for 3 seconds.
Right.
And feel as if, you know, feel your balance. See if you're on balance. And if you're perfectly balanced, then go ahead and accelerate into the ball. Because a lot of most amateurs get to the top and rush down, and they don't really set the club in place long enough, you know, to be able to swing into the ball with that gradual acceleration I talked about. So, what you want to try to do is keep your center or your sternum always behind the ball, and then moving into the ball on your downswing, kind of like in tennis when you hit a forehand.
Right.
You know, you're moving into the ball from the back of it, and that's what you want to do in golf. You want to load up on the backswing. Get your sternum, your center behind the ball, and then turn and rotate into the back of the ball as you come through instead of sliding. So it's important not to rush the downswing. That's a real biggie for the average golfer.
I only have about one more minute. Larry, Ben Hogan, widely considered the greatest ball striker in the history of the game. And what we love about your book is that you really go into detail and unveil, you know, some of his secrets of the perfect golf swing, right? Can you leave us with that?
He was very private and guarded about what he knew and what he figured out, and he stipulated he didn't want anything revealed too much until he was gone, and all the principles were. And my teacher, Tommy Bolt, was his student, passed on to me everything that Hogan taught him. So, you know, it's been really fun to be able to freely talk about these things without violating the man's privacy now that we're able to do that. And incidentally, today, this morning, I was at Cherry Hills and saw just a wonderful big photograph of Hogan on the 17th hole when he spun that ball back into the pond and lost the U.S. Open. But anyway, great memorabilia there.
Well, enjoy your weekend in Colorado. We've been going one-on-one with Larry Miller, Inside the Ropes. Always a true pleasure, and the best caddy out there, right?
Well, yeah, when my player makes birdies, right?
Absolutely. But thanks so much for joining us tonight. That, of course, was Larry Miller as we were Inside the Ropes tonight at SB Nation Radio.